Within printed page rests fates unseen, doused in ink and laid between. Shadows lurk within your findings, to other realms and beyond the binding.
Hello, I'm Max Lopez. Welcome to another episode of Beyond the Bindings, and this week we are going to start covering a series of books that I've only read partially because there's a lot of them, but I'm going to start the Discworld series by Terry Pratchett. Now, I've read the first five Discworld books maybe a couple of years ago. I don't really exactly remember. The Color of Magic and The Light Fantastic being the first two. So I'm going to start today with The Color of Magic, which was published in 1985. Discworld is written by Terry Pratchett. I kind of went back and forth. I actually finished this book last night, and it's like a two-day read. It's not a very, it's like 285 pages. It's not very long. Second one's the same. And I was ready to record it when I came home. Then I like made, you know, took care of some stuff, made dinner. And then I just kind of was like, you know, I might just wait till tomorrow. And then I hung around with the dogs for a little while and then just kind of was encouraged to. I was actually going to start the second one. And I kind of like to, if I'm reading books, like a series of books or whatever, it's kind of nice sometimes to not make the episode of the first one. You know, or I'd rather not start the second book and then, you know, in my mind know more than I actually guess I want to talk about here on the podcast. So I guess I'm, it's kind of semi-conscious decision. Sometimes I do that, sometimes I don't. For instance, when I did all of the different parts of Needful Things, I was for sure reading on, but then, you know, probably not that far ahead, but still reading on. Discworld is a very unique fantasy series in the sense of their comedies, and it's not something you see a lot from fantasy. Not saying that comedy isn't used as an element, because of course comedy is used as an element in many different styles of writing, from drama to horror. But these are explicitly kind of these comedy fantasies, which are very unique and actually is what intrigued me to read them originally. Now, since I've been a fan of fantasy since the beginning, I've actually read, because I was the kind of person that would go and like search on the internet, like, what are the must read fantasy books? And Discworld always came up, and I'll be honest, I was intrigued because there's 41 of them. So I was just fascinated by the pure amount that Terry Pratchett was able to write of these stories. Once I decided to jump into them, I realized that none of them, I shouldn't say that, they aren't consecutively telling one story. It's more that Discworld itself is just the setting, and he uses it in different ways to basically create different comedic scenarios in a fantasy realm, which is really cool and it's really clever, and it's not necessarily Douglas Adams. I've read in some interviews, and at the end of Good Omens, which is what inspired me to reread Discworld, and actually Good Omens was the book that inspired me to just to actually get into Discworld when I first got around to it, because I had never read a Terry Pratchett book, and I read Good Omens, and if you listen to the last episode, you know two episodes ago, I loved Good Omens, and I've always been a big fan of Neil Gaiman, and I knew that comedy piece was coming, like, not completely, but a good portion of it was coming from Pratchett in Good Omens. So I just bit the bullet when I was in England a few years ago, and I just went out and grabbed the first five Discworld books, and I was pretty hooked. It was one of those things where I read five of them, like, right in a row, and then I just never... I was like, okay, I'll take a break from this and then I'll get into book six and kind of continue on. And then it's been between then and now, and I've just read a ton of other books. So I plan on trying to go through them, not necessarily in a row. I'm definitely going to probably hit the first three or four in a row, especially because number four was my favorite of the five I read. Which is called Mort. But it's interesting because The Color of Magic and The Light Fantastic, those two books tell one consecutive story. And you are very much left with a cliffhanger at the end of The Color of Magic in the sense of, like, he could have just made one 600-page book. And I think it was a good decision for him to split it up the way he did, because I think that people who are maybe not going to binge read the book kind of can feel a little bit more comfortable taking a break from it. Maybe they need to read something else, get into another genre, and then come back to it and feel pretty comfortable where they left off. Because it's not like an overly complicated story. I suppose the best way to think of what I've read of Discworld is if you get confused in what's going on, then you're kind of just missing the joke. Because I'll be honest, there's been I've reread sections of these books like two or three times before, just to like fully wrap my mind around the way he kind of builds the comedy as far as it revolving around like characters and creatures and things like that, because it's not just like jokes. The joke is the circumstance, which is really pretty great. And I talked about it with Good Omens, that visual piece of comedy is really essential for us as humans when we're being entertained by comedy. So he kind of uses this new strategy in writing it into books, which is really cool. And it's really just kind of revolves around circumstances and who characters are, and kind of like almost like what archetype they represent, in a like almost making fun of, you can't really say humans because they're not always humans, but like making fun of sentient beings, I guess, and making fun of like just character traits, which is pretty awesome. Now, as far as comedies go, I'm surprised I didn't mention it. Just kind of slipped my mind with Good Omens is, I love Douglas Adams, and I love the whole Hitchhiker's Guide series. Those books are incredible. Again, those are some of the only books that actually make me laugh. And I've read that Pratchett has been compared to Douglas Adams, and I see why you would, because Adams is kind of like that. He does a similar comedy thing, but with sci-fi, where Pratchett's doing it here with fantasy. And my view of fantasy and sci-fi is that fantasy usually does involve sci-fi, but sci-fi doesn't always involve fantasy. And I would say Discworld certainly has some sci-fi aspects of it, but it also is just inherently fantasy, where you don't really have that in the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy series. I love those books, though. Those books are very, like, metaphysical as far as life and existence and everything like that, where Pratchett, I personally feel, from what I've read, of course, like I said, I haven't read all 41 of them, I think Pratchett more dives into, like, human personalities, because that's what we know, but personality traits and those circumstances I was talking about, and how he kind of manipulates them and finds these funny scenarios. If you've read one, or if you give one a shot, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about, because they're very simple stories. You just kind of can get mixed up in regards to just like how silly a moment can be within it, which can be a little confusing at times, because he is creating a lot of kind of new types of characters or new types of creatures. So this is just a two-part backstory on Discworld, because if you don't know what Discworld is, you wouldn't know this, and this is one of the goofiest parts of the whole series, is that Discworld is a flat planet. It's a disc, and it sits on the back of four like giant elephants that are described as the size of continents each. So it sits on the back of this. Water overflows from the sides. It's recycled somehow into space. And, you know, I haven't read The Science of Discworld, which is a book itself, which I would be curious to read. And that, I don't believe, is written by Terry Pratchett. I'm sure he was involved in the creation of it. I don't know that for a fact. But those four continent-sized elephants are standing on the back of the Great Atuan, which is a giant, Giant is an understatement. If the elephants are continent sized, this thing's like the size of a planet itself. This turtle the size of a planet, which is flying through space. And so basically the planet rests upon four continent sized elephants that stand on the back of a cosmic sea turtle. Or I've always imagined it as being kind of a sea turtle. And I think feel like I've seen that in like fan art and everything like that. So yeah, super ridiculous and just incredible. And like when I read about that long before I ever started the series. And so when those first pages start, which are just like really poetically written, and I absolutely love it. The intro to this, to the first Discworld book, The Color of Magic, is just, it's a goosebumps type thing for me. Especially because it could fool you into thinking that these are not just ridiculously silly, which they 100% are. So, that's just a little background on Discworld. You get a lot of the same type of creatures and characters that you get in fantasy worlds, wizards, witches, trolls, things such as that. But so The Color of Magic starts in a town called Ankh-Morpork Pork, which is a silly name. But also, this is kind of from a few of the, from the five I've read, this city has played a role in one way or the other, in one way or another, or it's at least been mentioned. So within Ankh-Morpork Pork, which I'll never get over saying that, especially because I only really say it in my head ever, there is a university called the Unseen University, which is like where all the wizards go to train. And in that university, there is like the worst wizard of all time. According to him, he's just barely a wizard, and his name is Rincewind. And he is such an interesting and hilarious character because he only knows one spell. And he learned it on accident, and it's such a powerful spell that he can't actually say it. But at the same time, it's the only spell he can have. It's the only spell he's capable of remembering because the spell is so powerful, and he can't even use it. And throughout this entire book, that kind of slips up and plays a role in how he can't use it, and it's hilarious. You're cut away to a different character named Two Flower, and Two Flower is actually a tourist. You actually, I believe, if I remember correctly, get introduced to Two Flower first. And he's from the Agteen Empire, which is like the counterweight continent on Discworld. I believe the way it's explained is it's like the continent that stops all of Discworld tipping over and falling into space. Which would be, you know, just those kind of ideas that Terry Pratchett thinks out are just so, so hilarious. I just find those little, like, just those little details that he adds in being such, like, an essential part of why reading these stories is so much fun. Essentially, Two Flower and Rincewind meet at a bar, or a tavern, I suppose is what they call them, I think. And Two Flower is a tourist. He just wants to see the whole of Discworld. He's only read about it in books, and he really, or not of Discworld, but of the continent that they're on. And he just wants to explore it and really see everything he can see. And that's kind of his goal for the entire book. He actually has this bit of luggage with him that, like, kind of imagine a treasure chest, like a pirate's treasure chest. But it has all these feet on the bottom of it. And he seemingly stores everything and anything and everything within this. But when he lifts it up, it's described as like having teeth. It eats people throughout the whole thing. We never see him again. So it's kind of like a human eating like 80 feet on this treasure chest. And it follows Two Flower around. And he's like his companion. It's almost like a dog. It's definitely described by Pratchett as with having kind of dog characteristics, which is really funny. And so he clearly has a ton of money, and he doesn't understand the concept of how much money he has in this particular continent. He's like a billionaire, and everybody knows it except for him. So like right away, there's just all of these circumstances have happened of people trying to steal his money, kill him, try to coax him into doing one thing or the other. And Rincewind, somehow or some way, because he's a complete moron, is the one who finagles being paid by Two Flower every day to be shown around the world, which is, you know, just the circumstances for Rincewind is just like, he's just kind of like your beloved idiot kind of deal. And he's so hilarious, especially just like, I consider wizardry like so epic and so incredible. Like I think of like, in a lot of my, in Lord of the Rings, for instance, my favorite fantasy series of all time, my favorite character is Gandalf. I love Gandalf. But I mean, my, kind of like, I don't know if I get, because I love the Hobbits. I'm a big Hobbit guy. But like the character I put up on this like god type pedestal is Gandalf, you know, because you don't get much of Tom Bombadil in Lord of the Rings, who is like, you know, you're, from what I've read, kind of like the, like almost like a god type figure. But Gandalf, for me, I put him on that pedestal. He is like the epitome of like the most epic of epic fantasy characters. And then you look at Discworld and you get introduced to Rincewind, who is just like this stupid fool of a wizard. And he's almost like, in a way, like the opposite of Gandalf. And it's just, I'm curious if that was, like, if that was, there was a lot of intention there for Rincewind, because he's great. Like the character itself is just so goofy and silly and so opposite of that wizard that we know and fear and love all at the same time. So it's very, very, very cool. And that's what they do. They go exploring, and they really don't really have a choice because of some circumstances that have happened in Ankh-Morpork. But along the way, they meet and get them meet many different creatures. They get themselves involved in many different situations, and they end up meeting a few companions along the way. One in particular is a character named Hrun, H-R-U-N. And he is just kind of, he's like supposed to be like Conan the Barbarian. Like there's a portion where he's being described as like, he's like sitting there around like a campfire or something. He's like oiling his muscles just like for no reason. And it's just so funny. And that's just kind of like the idea of like the, him taking and like abusing some of the most silly parts of specific types of like characters. And this one, he's kind of choosing like the hunky barbarian, and I just think it's just so well done. And also, he doesn't linger on anything for very long, which is kind of nice. And I mean, they make him easy to read, which is cool, and that you never really feel like, okay, like, wow, so we're gonna get three more chapters of this, huh? It's like typically you get about one chapter, and actually the book isn't even necessarily written into chapters. It's kind of just broken into sections, like one giant chapter. But it actually, parts. It's broken into parts now that I think about it. There's four parts in it, I believe. But yeah, so Hrun. And then the other character I really liked is this sea troll named Tethys. And it's interesting the circumstances that they meet this sea troll, because they're like, they get stuck in the water after the situation happens. And then this thing starts talking to them. And that's, this is the kind of writing that Pratchett does that's like something I've honestly never seen before, because like all of a sudden Rincewind and Two Flower are having a conversation, and you, as the reader, you're like, wait a second, who is this thing? Who is this person they're talking to? And then it's described as a sea troll, but when the sea troll is in the sea, it's like a physical, like it's a part of the sea, so you can't necessarily see it. But it's basically like, imagine the human form, but remove everything and you're just water. So like, it's like the outline and shape of a human, can talk, everything like that, but it's made of water. And it at one point it's described as like, when they're out of the water and he's still in this form, and he's in this form, that like a school of fish like run across his chest, because they're like swimming within him. He's like kind of like a walking, talking, thinking fish tank. And it's just, I think that is so fascinating, with this idea that these types of ideas that Pratchett comes up with, like there are things that could so interestingly be woven into like a very serious fantasy series, and he uses them in just these contexts that create so much irony. And although it's woven around irony, there is a lot of beauty in like importance in concepts of life, and like I was saying with these character traits, like kind of taking them and poking fun at them a little bit, but also like learning from that type of person. Like Rincewind is an oblivious fool, but reading through the perspective and reading a story that follows an oblivious fool can teach you certain lessons, I believe, about being more aware of when we're oblivious, because we all are oblivious. So it's kind of essential to take that character, that oblivious fool, and try and put yourself in that view and say, like, well, we're all like this. So when are the times that I'm like this, and how can I be more aware of it? And I think that's such a cool idea when you're reading Discworld, is to kind of look for that. And I know that it's not always going to be that oblivious fool character like Rincewind here, or like Two Flower is just kind of like happy for the sake of happy. He's kind of like just happy to be alive, happy to explore, which is also like something important to see in yourself. Like when you look out at the world and say, I'm happy just to go out, I'm happy just to see what this place gives me for the time that I have, that and are allowed to be here and viewing the things that I get to experience, which is, you know, it's beautiful. It's a really cool underlying thing that I feel that Discworld has, and it's had it in all of the five I've read, and it's really cool. I think that it's something that maybe you have to look for a little bit more, but it's definitely there. Essentially, what happens in this whole scheme of The Color of Magic is they end up on the outskirts of the disc. So they end up on what they call the circumference, and that's where they met Tethys, the sea troll. And his job is actually to patrol like one third of the circumference. I believe it was one third, which is, would you imagine, is a good portion of this world. But I guess Tethys has got it in him. And they end up getting captured by this kind of like, it seems like almost like a more advanced race called the Kroll. And the Kroll end up wanting to launch Rincewind and Two Flower over the edge because they want to, this is all on the tail end of the turtle, the Great Atuan, and they're trying to find out the sex of the Great Atuan. So that's what they want to do. They want to send Two Flower and Rincewind over the edge. And honestly, that's kind of where the book leaves you for now, because it's this two-parter. And I'm not so sure if there are other two-part Discworld books. There are, like, there's a couple different things. Characters like Rincewind comes up again in, he gets mentioned in other books, I believe, and he's also a character in other books. But also there's, like, topics or ideas that certain books revolve around. Like, there's a series of five books that all revolve around the character of Death. And Death is also in this book, and I believe he's in the second one as well. But then there's others where he's playing almost like a main character role. My favorite one, it's called Mort, and he plays that kind of, Death is that sort of role in Mort. And that was, I love that one. I was going to start off with that one and just not go back to the first three. But then I was like, you know, the completionist in me wanted to like start from the beginning again. And they're such quick reads. But then there's also ones that concern witches and, I don't know really any of the other ones, I guess, off the top of my head. But obviously they all take place here on Discworld, and Ankh-Morpork Park also plays a role in all of them as well. So I don't plan on covering them all in a row, obviously, because that would be 41 episodes. But I'm definitely going to try and do at least, I'm going to start probably pretty heavy with the Discworld, and then maybe back off to one a month, or maybe one every 2 months. That would still take a really long time to finish the whole series. Now that I think about it, yeah, without just like completely putting everything else down, which I don't really want to do. I think that would kind of take away from the podcast here. But I'm excited. I'm just going to roll with it for now and just get them done. I might just read a bunch of them too and then separate the episode releases, just so they're not just like back-to-back-to-back Discworld. But it'll be fun to kind of do like to cover a bunch of them. Now, I need to make a note because I didn't talk about magic enough in this episode. But that's fine. I'm not even going to go back to it because The Light Fantastic is just a continuation of it. And I'm making a note right now to make sure to talk about how Terry Pratchett uses magic, because it's very, very interesting. It's very conceptual, and I think that it's really cool and really well done. Well, I'm super glad I got the got it in me to make this episode tonight. I hope you all enjoyed it. As usual, go get a library card and go check out some Discworld books. Terry Pratchett says you don't have to read them in order, but he says that it'll help. I don't think you necessarily have to read them in order either, but I trust Terry, so I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to read them in order, and you should follow along with me. So like I said, grab a library card, and as always, I'm Max Lopez, and this is Beyond the Bindings.